Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast.
Today is Sunday, the 20th. I am sitting here at the editing bay, chopping up some old audio for you. It's a study session that Sam and I did. Basically, we were looking through a book for a class, and he was about to take a final in that class. So what he had made is he had made a break-it-down list of questions, meaning things that I should answer, questions numbered, you know, I don't know. He had like almost 100 questions. It was pretty ridiculous. Anyway, some of it is really hard to put in podcast mode. So how it's going to work is a lot of these clips are going to be heavily edited by me. Like I'm taking out people saying ums and blah, blah, blah. And I also try to break up topics or break up the audio per topic. So what that means is I might put the little beep sound in and that'll either mean a new question or it'll mean a lot of time has passed. Or just basically a transition. So we will see. There's a lot of audio here. I'm not sure how much I was going to be able to give to you guys as a gift. And I understand that just one person on a podcast is not as fun. I mean, if you know me personally, whatever, big deal. But I always like to have new people on or, you know, the good old guy, Sam and Merrick. So let's go. This is Ben and Sam discussing, what's the name of the book?
The book. It's called Windows Forensic Analysis.
October 15th, 3 a.m. And try to keep it, like, not like yelling in front of me, you know, sleeping or whatever, so.
Okay.
He's like two rooms away. Okay, so what's up, dude? Show me your questions.
So, I have about...
Okay, start with number one. Let's just start with one, whatever.
I need to know... Okay. The difference between GMT and UTC time. In the book, it's said that they're analogous, sort of. It's really vague. I'm like, what is the difference? And if there is a difference...
And did you try looking this up on Wikipedia or
no,
some sort?
I purposely saved these to really annoy you because I expect you to sort of just know everything.
Well, I don't know GMT versus
Okay, regardless of that.
I already searched... it's already been searched for in my browser because you asked me this dumb shit question before. I'm pretty sure that... Okay, so GMT is based on the Greenwich Observatory
right.
in London.
That's
okay.
Right.
UTC is more sophisticated.
Do you ever have to deal with these at work?
Hold on. Shut up.
Fucking mouth.
Okay, so... As more sophisticated timepieces became available, the need for a new international time standard became apparent. Clocks, atomic clocks, did not need to keep time based on the average solar time at a particular location that were very, very accurate, because they were very accurate. So it became understood that due to the irregularity of the Earth and Sun's movements, the exact time needed to be modified occasionally through the use of leap seconds. So they realized that the clocks were so accurate that you couldn't just... use GMT. Like, if you just took an atomic clock, it would eventually drift from the time that we
right.
observe as humans, right? So UTC is based on 0 degrees longitude, which actually does patch through Greenwich Mean Observatory. But it includes leap seconds, and they're added to our clock every so often. So that's it.
Okay, so it's all right, fine. Okay, so they're analogous.
Yeah,
except for like a leap second.
Right, a leap second, which whenever. Is yeah, exactly. Okay, next.
Okay, but I still don't understand UTC in general. I get that it's, you know, universal standard. So if I tell you I'm going to be here at 2 a.m. in New York or in Paris or whatever, that means 2 a.m. period. It's not 2 a.m. your time or my time. It's
right. It's, well, it's 2 a.m. in London time is what it is.
Okay.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I'll get back to other questions that involve that. So, thanks.
Okay.
I'm glad that they're the same, except for leap seconds, because, you know.
Yeah.
Someone's going to ask me that on the stand. I'm going to say they're pretty much the same just because. Okay, don't worry about it. Next question. That's not going to fly. It may or may not fly. Hold on, mosquito.
Oh. My laptop better still work after that.
Yeah, that was straight on the laptop.
He's gone. Fuck.
Dude, it's the worst.
Fuck, well, we'll get him.
When he's in your ear.
I have a warranty on this bad boy, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Just fucking. Okay, NTFS, system store file times in UTC, which is analogous to NTK. FAT system store file times in local system time. Wonderful.
That's great. Great. Good. Great job, guys.
Fantastic. Okay. All right. Are you familiar with netstat negative R identifying persistent routes? Does that make sense to you?
A persistent route? I think. Is that a Windows thing?
Yes.
Okay, let's try it.
But I imagine.
I'm pretty sure I know what netstat minus R means. If I'm correct, then I've actually added some.
Hey, that looks like the print route table.
Yeah, it's a route table. Okay. So it's you said roots. I mean, it's the same thing as route. It's just pronounced differently, but... Yeah, on Linux, it's a lot more clear, dude. Yeah, on Linux, it's a lot more clear. So, by a lot more clear, I mean 100% clear. So basically, this is the only row you need as default. So this is your router. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, default. There's the router. There's the...
mask.
What the hell is a gen mask?
It has to do with masking bits off. So remember, you know, usually when you're setting your thing, that's that, there's that one thing, that mask, which is 255.255.255.0. If you take those numbers in, basically, you're looking at the numbers in hex, right? So 255 is FF. Do I have a Windows calculator here? Let's get this going. So we have 255, 255, 255, and 0, and we also have 0.0.0.0.0. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's look at those in hex.
Did you just full screen the VM?
Yeah, right? I did, but my nice. CPU is hell. I'm CPU bounding, and because...
Saving power?
Save power. I mean, I could just plug it in, or I could just up the CPU juice, whatever. So we have 255 in hex. I'm not sure. This is not going to be... Wait, from decimal? This is not going to be the same thing. Yes, no, it's not. So basically, each little thing between the dots are handled separately, right?
Gotcha.
So FF. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be FF, 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 00, and this is just 00s. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, with the mask, is if you see an address and it falls within this mask, then you send it there. So we only have one mask, basically, which is this is like the catch all.
So am I to interpret zeros as a wild card?
It's like a wild card. Okay. But if we were to change this mask to to this,
yeah,
that means that we would only be catching, we would only be routing even numbered addresses, because you have the one. So basically, that mask, that basically says that you fail matching. If there's a one, you fail matching. If there's a zero, it's a positive match. I don't know why that is.
Oh, okay,
does that make sense?
Kinda. So persistent routes. Wait, hold on. And then flags, metric, see, like, I don't know what this stuff is, but I could look it up, right? But
what the so the route, basically, most everybody's computer on their own home network has one route, your home router,
to your
internet. Router. It's just where you route all your traffic. Gotcha. So if you were on a corporate network, you might have different routes.
Sure. To different SANs or whatever or something. Okay. So a persistent route might be something installed by like a keylogger or something that has a persistent connection to...
Maybe.
Or like, is VNC would be a persistent route, wouldn't it?
No. I think that your corporate router that had two routers, your corporate, they're running Active Directory and they're setting all your policies and they add a persistent route, which, I mean, I can look it up, but which basically allows them to, you know, all your internal traffic, any internal web servers that they have at IBM or whatever, go through this router and they go...
For clocking in and out.
Or whatever.
Gotcha.
But also, I think your router's a persistent route, dude. By default, added routes are not preserved when the TCP/IP protocol is started. Persistent routes are stored in the registry key HKLM system concurrent control set service of TCP/IP parameters persistent routes. So, if I were to add a route right now, and then restart my computer, it'd be gone.
Gotcha. When someone in a book writes something like this, you can do this, or you can do this to identify persistent routes, and they keep moving on, I assume that they might not know fully enough about it, and that's why they're sort of just moving on quickly without explaining what the hell that means.
That's probably true of a technical book that's like that or whatever.
Yeah, I get suspicious about that, but thanks.
Okay, next question.
So I made a note here about using this tool called listdlls.exe, which can identify rootkit spyware, etc., that does DLL injection. I sort of have a better idea about what that is.
DLL injection now?
Kinda. It's like something can... You run some code, and it can take a DLL in memory and insert itself or replace that DLL, but use right. the free space of that DLL to store the code somehow. So every time you run whatever other program, it'll automatically keep the malware persistent.
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty sneaky. Did you know that in one of the run, you know, the registry keys that has that's the auto run crap?
Okay.
If you add a star before the executable path, it will start in safe mode. All you gotta do is add the star. You can keep your fucking malware running in safe mode. That's it.
So, wow.
It's that easy.
And so people figured that out a long time ago, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I mean,
not
surprisingly,
everybody uses it, but...
Yeah, not well, that many
lowest,
use it.
Lowest hanging fruit, dude.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not used that often. That malware that I just terminated, the 5,000 instances...
What was that called?
It was called Cloud Protection Virus. And she had a couple other ones, like the Zeus Trojan and some other keyloggers. I think it was a fucking mess. And this computer is only like 4 months old. I'm like, what did you... Microsoft Security Essentials was installed on it. It's not good enough.
I'd never seen that specific virus before, but...
Me either, but you know, you get one and then it's just like they all come in like the floodgates. Such a disaster. The thing is, I first booted the computer into... safe mode and just ran a scan because I was at work and I didn't have any of my tools, so I can't take the drive out, can't do a regular scan, so it fully could have been rootkitted, whatever. By the way, I finally understand what a rootkit is.
You do?
Nobody could ever explain to me what a rootkit is.
It just helps you hide your person.
It's so not that hard to understand.
I always thought it was something different. I originally thought it was just a virus, but no, all it does is hide your processes and stuff.
It's like an epic clever virus.
But it doesn't do anything on its own. Rootkit on its right. own doesn't.
Yeah,
you need to piggyback on top of it to right.
I like it. Super clever. Yes, I boot in a safe mode, start running the scan. It finds like 200 instances. I wipe them all.
Yeah.
Then I reboot. The thing's still there. I'm like, fuck my life. Like, you know,
right?
It's obviously clever. So then I'm like, okay, well, I'll just run the scan with the system live. Maybe that'll like, I don't know.
Whatever.
It could happen. And then it just kept counting up. Like, the thing was auto-generating new EXEs every time I would kill one. So that's why it hit the 10,000 mark. Okay. I was like, okay, this is never going to end. Like, every single one, it just kept counting up, like, the red number. I was like, this is bad. So, yeah, so I took it home, took the drive out, ran a full scan with, like, three different scanners. By the way, totalvirus.com.
Yeah.
Ever been there?
No.
Excellent. You can upload any piece of malware.
I've been there, yeah.
Okay.
It's a virus uploader. I know.
Yeah, but it runs it against like 38 different
scans. I know. It's pretty nice.
How cool is that?
You get more false positives with that, but it's pretty nice.
Probably. Yeah, there's a lot of ones that, like, if you run a keygen through it, it'll be like 50-50, you know, like,
yeah, you're like, well,
yeah, run that thing in a VM for sure. There's lots of...
That's a good point. Run your keygens in VMs.
Might as well, you know.
No, because all you need is the text. It's not like you're running the game in the VM or the crack. You can't run the crack in the VM.
Yeah.
But you can run the keygen, though.
Unless you can crack it and then take the file out, but no.
But that doesn't do anything for you.
That's right. What a mess. What have I got here? Fucking mess. Jesus Christ. I'd be curious to know how much of this stuff you know already.
Probably not. Your brain's a lot.
You have a lot of stuff floating around your brain. You're just like, oh yeah, I know that for some reason. I don't know when the hell I learned that. But
yeah, well.
It's always very surprising. pclip.exe. It's a command line utility to retrieve clipboard contents.
Cool.
Super cool.
Thank you. I thought you wanted me to tell... I haven't used that application before, but yes, I've done clipboard modifications.
Just a fun fact for you to know.
Alright.
Oh. There's this area called protected storage in XP, maybe Vista, all the Windows operating systems.
Okay.
That keeps, it's encrypted in the registry when the system is powered down. So every time you turn it on, it's open. It stores the stuff like the autofill in Internet Explorer and a couple of other auto things like that that are usually specific to Internet Explorer and Windows stuff. So I'm curious as to how it's encrypted, since you don't have any control over that. You don't enter a password, it just is encrypted. Yeah, even if you don't have a Windows password. So does it...
Seems pretty futile to me. I mean, basically, that means that you have to have the password on the drive unencrypted, and it means that every single Windows computer is going to have that password in the same place. It might be a different password for every Windows computer, but it's going to be in the same place. So if you had an app that ran at like, if you had a boot CD that said, you know, put in this drive, we'll boot the thing, and it'll read it off the drive. Seems pretty trivial for it to just open it up.
Mm-hmm.
But even easier would be if you were in, like, a forensic situation, you would just clone the drive or start it with a write blocker or whatever and just pull the stuff off. Like, it's open. It's already, once it's been mounted to the operating system.
Some of them have a password. You can't actually get it in the system. So if you VM it and then boot it, you're still locked out. You're staring at the lock screen. Or,
that's a good point, I guess.
Yeah, so you can't quite get in there, run your tools and stuff.
But you can just reset the Windows password.
Yeah, I guess you can do that.
I mean, that sometimes will lock you out of their... Sometimes of their private directory. You know how people... You can set the password in your private directory? Like, you can say, make my files private in Windows XP.
Yeah. Does that work? Have you ever done that?
Yeah, it works. It does. It does actually encrypt it with your password. I don't know how strong it is or whatever, but I'm pretty sure if you do a reset password from a boot CD, you lose those files.
Harsh.
Well, it's... I mean, yeah.
It's encryption. Okay. So it has some encryption that I don't know. Okay. Cool. Have you ever looked at a RAM dump before?
Yeah. Have you ever run SoftICE before?
No.
Do you know what SoftICE is?
No.
You know what SoftICE is?
No.
Dude, SoftICE, you hit some magic... You install it and hit some magic key. The whole Windows system freezes. You go to a DOS screen, and you're able to go through all the RAM, all the open executables, all the DLLs. It's so cool, dude. SoftICE is, like, legit. It's like all the crackers and game hackers use it, because they run the game.
Right. You boot it up, and then it says, like... Yeah. Enter CD killer.
I saw this really cool guide on how to hack assembly to get the game to accept bad CD keys. Basically, the guy was running SoftICE, and he brought up the dialogue where you enter the CD key, and he put in some shit, and then I think he went into SoftICE, or he like somehow put a breakpoint or something, and then when he clicked OK, it made the Windows donk sound like, oh, you put the password in correctly.
Dude.
And then he trapped on that sound and was able to find the right place in the...
Dude, that's so legit.
And then I think he did was he just flipped the bit or something. So if the CD key was wrong, it would accept it. If the CD key was right, it would deny you. And that's all he had to do. Just put in any random CD key and it works fine.
What?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is really nice. So you obviously have to have that installed and then do a reboot.
Yeah, you have to definitely do a reboot. That's like a oh, you could ignore the reboot kind of thing. You really have to do the reboot.
There's a whole hilarious section in this book where it was like, you can execute a Windows crash dump, you know, whatever it is, crash.dmp file on your own by hitting like, what is it called? Scroll lock twice or something, and control scroll lock twice. And he's like, but you have to set that register key and restart. I'm like, yeah, okay, let me
do that real quick.
This forensic computer this guy's been arrested. Let me do that and restart his computer, and then we'll do the crash dump.
Yeah,
come on.
Can't run a crash dump with an AXE or anything?
There's like several ways to do it, but they're all not. They all have trade offs. You have to like be smart and do the right best one.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're gonna get grilled later for doing the wrong one.
Yeah. Have you looked at dumps, crash dumps and stuff before?
Not really, just from this book.
Do you want to look at one?
Sure.
I can't exactly give you a crash dump, but what I'll give you is I'll give you a debug dump. Is that interesting to you?
Sure. Dude, everything's interesting to me.
Let's see if we can get this to work.
I was really laughing at the last podcast where you said, when we first started hanging out, you're like, Sam's this cool technology guy, and he's using web. Fucking up at myself.
Let's go ahead and get this going. Alright, dude, so.
What is this about?
Oh, I don't know. It happened. It was a thing.
Alright.
So what I'm doing is I'm adding the minus G flag to all my compiled sources. And that will make it...
What does that mean?
So the
compiled sources?
So this is my web crawler here.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, for context, this is my web crawler. And for each time it compiles a file, you say minus G for the debugger. Whatever. Right. So when I make it... Hold on.
It always looks
I know why. It always looks like what?
It always looks like you're hacking.
I am hacking. I'm hacking my homework. Okay. So we were looking at main. Let's see. This is my main here. The first thing main does is it makes an object for Redis. This is how it talks to Redis. It has this object. Mm-hmm. That's how you talk to Redis. And then it basically says, start up Redis. And if that didn't work, says error, and it tells you is it started or not, idiot, and then it bails. Okay?
Gotcha.
So if we look at that,
that's what happens when I use Linux, dude. It's one error message after another.
That is a problem, usually. I am having issues. You ask me something, and I'll get this working, all right?
Okay. 1% of the brain power.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll probably have to look this up. There's this part in the book where he says that the hibernation file is compressed and in most cases will not contain the current contents of memory. I'm not sure why he used the word current.
Because the hibernation file, if it's on, if the
like
system
is hibernated right now.
No, wait, okay. read the whole thing again.
The hibernation file is compressed and in most cases will not contain the current contents of memory.
So
we're assuming it's
the,
on and I pull it. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's like really obvious though, but determine the operating system of a dump file. Fucking mess.
Okay. That's not that hard.
Oh, here we go. We subtract, here's the confusing part. Right.
Okay.
I'm supposed to run this program called LiveKD, and we'll display a bunch of stuff, including the kernel base, and something like blah.
Okay.
And then, quote, we subtract this from that address and go to the resulting physical location within the dump file. What?
Okay, you need to calm down and stop being such a noob. So let's break it down. All right, Sam, I know this is like basic math for you. It's like basic, like we're in third grade, but we can do it, right? So, I don't know what LiveKD is, your kernel dump.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense. Sure.
We'll display a bunch of stuff in the kernel base. So kernel base is basically an offset address. So, remember how in Windows 95 all the programs shared all the memory together, and when they went to Windows 98, each one thought it had its own memory. So basically, if You have two programs. They both think they have address 7, even though they don't really have the same address in RAM.
They're virtualized.
They're virtualized, right? Yeah. So this is what the offset base is. So basically, it's saying if it thinks that it has address... If the program thinks that it has address 4D7000, mm-hmm. then really it's at 80 4D7000.
All right, guys, not to break in here, but basically what I just said was that the program thought it had address, and when I say 0x, I mean the next number is going to be in hex, but 0x4D7000. Now, the difference is that the offset we're talking about, which you can't see because we're in podcast land, the offset is 80 million or 80000000. That would be 7 zeros. Now, the way it works is you add the offset, so 8000, to the original number, which I said, which was 4D7000, and you're just adding them on top of each other. And the cool thing is that the 8 number with the 8s and the 0s, which is the offset, doesn't interfere. None of the digits interfere because there's zeros in between. So it's really clear to see that, you know, the original number is 5 characters long, and the new number is 6-7 characters long because it has an 8-0 appended or prepended before it. So that would be why you would be adding or subtracting that offset.
So basically, all the addresses that the program has, you either want to add or subtract, whatever this is, 8 million or 8 billion or whatever.
How do I know,
how do you visualize that?
How do I know what to subtract?
It's the base.
Okay.
So basically, you have to look at which way you're going. If you're looking at an actual address in RAM, mm-hmm. that's already been offset. Because it's in RAM.
Right.
That makes sense. It's already been there. So you want to take away the offset. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about the program things,
it's different.
It's when we're talking about the program, if it's been virtualized, mm-hmm. then you want to add the offset to get where you actually get to RAM.
Right. Okay. In this case, hold on. What the hell am I trying to do here? I have the dump file. Hold on, let me just keep going. If the first two bytes located at that address are... okay.
KR.
RMZ.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a file signature for Windows Portable Executable File. I didn't know what that was at the time, because this guy like jumped ahead like 10 chapters for some reason. But the way it's written is confusing to me. If the first two bytes located at that address are MZ, we could have a full-blown Windows Portable Executable at that location, and we might have the kernel.
Okay, so what he's... there's so many issues going on right now in my head, but... what he's saying
let's
is...
Let's start with the first issue.
Okay, well, let's look at MZ. You know what MZ?
Yeah, I understand what that is.
Okay.
It's just a file signature.
So we pspad this URL right here. MZ.
What'd you put in there?
An EXE.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so...
Okay, so this... Okay, I'm sorry, I'll open it up again. So this EXE generates this image on my desktop, which tells you what my IP is.
Oh, how convenient.
Actually, it tells me both IPs. So I have two network cards on this VM, so...
What do you have that for?
That's a whole other... So we talk about it for Starbucks, actually, but...
Okay.
So here's MZ, right here. So this EXE, they all start with MZ, right? It's MZ, mm-hmm. and then, you know, this crap...
Yeah,
and you know, actually, this would be a good thing to look for. If you looked at offset 50, and if you saw that it said THIS space program must be running on Windows 32, then mm-hmm. you actually know that you have a... Like, if you see this within the first 50 bytes, mm-hmm. if you see 5468-6973,
certainly,
then that would be a good thing. Okay, so continue. So, if it starts with MZ...
Well, this is just saying if you see MZ in memory, then you could theoretically pull the executable out of memory, you know?
And right.
The executable.
But you don't know how large it is, huh?
Correct. But there's some ending stuff. I can't remember how you do it. It's way further down here, which I may or may not get to.
All right.
So, okay. Get an image of the system. So basically, a lot of the times, apparently, so people give you RAM dumps, and they say, and you ask them what operating system, they tell you it's Windows. Which one?
Right. Okay.
And so you need to know which one
okay,
it is.
Okay, right.
Otherwise, you, like, it takes forever.
Oh, yeah, right.
So you're basically looking for the Windows kernel, I guess.
Okay.
The Windows kernel might be loaded into the same location in memory every time Windows boots. And that changed with address layer randomization thing.
And is that for the whole operating system as well?
Wouldn't it be?
I guess.
Isn't that the whole point? So you can't, like, rootkit the
kernel? Well, the whole point, yeah, that makes sense. It was, I remember specifically they had it for Explorer or whatever. Internet Explorer.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, because that thing was getting owned all the time.
Right.
So the easiest way to find this is to run livekd, because we did it early in the chapter, which I fully forgot about. So you run it against the dump file, and it tells you the kernel base.
Okay.
Which looks a lot like this. That's the DX7000
thing. You can say it 0x. It's hex. 84D7000.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you don't have to. When you say blah blah blah, you lose power over the number. Gotcha. You just say it's, I don't know what it is, and then you can't understand it as easily.
So we're most. So then we're subtracting that from the address, and I'm immediately curious. Why are we subtracting that? How do you know it's that number?
Well, because it's the base. Kernel base equals this. Yeah, that's all they really talk about, subtracting the kernel base out. I don't know why he knows to subtract 8,000.
And I guess he probably doesn't fucking know either.
Yeah, if it was... Oh, I know why. Okay, I know why. Maybe. So when you take a binary number... So we have... It's 8, right? Binary. Right. Okay, so 8, it means it's a negative number. So, you probably didn't talk about binary encoding and stuff like that, but you can take, like, all of the hex numbers I've ever showed you, like, when we took, like, what is 7 in hex, or what is 7 in binary or whatever, these have all been unsigned, meaning you cannot, always positive, you can't represent a negative number. So everything we've ever talked about on Gmail AIM, that's always been only positive numbers. If you want to represent a negative number, you have to change the mapping between decimal and binary. Because you have to represent negative numbers. It means that you are only able to represent half as many numbers, right? Because you have to represent now all the positive and the negatives in the same number of bits. So you half the number that you can do. I mean,
gotcha.
Instead of from 65,535, you get negative 32,000 and positive 32,000. Mm-hmm. So, this is a negative number.
Okay.
I don't know why... Basically, he's subtracting it from being negative by subtracting this 8 out. This number looks like 1 and then 31 zeros. Or, yeah, 1 followed by 31 zeros. So, this is just, like, at the very top of the binary number is that 1 or a 0. So, you can always tell if a number is positive or negative. If there's a 1, it's negative.
We'll start with 8.
Right, so he's basically making it not negative anymore.
Okay.
No?
You said if it starts with a 1, then it's negative. If it starts with an 8.
If it starts with a binary 1. So 8, 9, 10, 11, okay. 8, 9, 10, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, F would all be negative.
Okay. So anything above 8?
Yes. Is negative? 8 and above is negative.
Gotcha. Okay, I can hang with that. Okay, so this is a negative number. And then he's subtracting this to make it a positive number.
Right, just like a normal number. Although that's not quite how you make it. That's not quite right, but... You're actually supposed to subtract and add 1 to make it a positive number, but... Besides that, it's besides the point.
Okay. And I'm doing this so that I can...
You can just basically... All he's saying is basically just ignore the top... Ignore the most significant bit. You familiar with, like, most significant, least significant?
Sort of.
Least significant bit is at the very end.
All right.
So, if we type this out, this is 7,000, right?
Uh-huh.
This is what just the 7,000 looks like. This is the least significant bit, is that 0, and the most significant bit is this 1 up here.
Okay.
So if we were to type the whole thing out, what is it? 80 D...
This one?
Yeah.
804 D 7,000.
Okay, so we look at the binary. That's what it is. So all he's saying is just remove the most, the MSB, set it to a zero, and then take the rest, and that's what you have.
Okay.
Okay? I don't know why he's saying that, but...
Okay. He's saying that so that we can... I don't know, so you can get to the kernel and determine the operating system.
Right. So that's just how you do it. Like, you're not going to get more meaning out of this besides the fact that this is what you do. Because that's some programmer decided that this is our kernel base, and we're gonna if you offset the base, then you get the beginning of the kernel. That's how it works. This is how we're designing all of our systems. That's how the crash dump files are designed. Mm-hmm. So crash dump files always look like this.
All right.
And you always subtract the base... from you always take this to lop off the top bit and then go to that in the file.
All right.
So you're not going to understand any more than that. So next question. I mean, are you at peace with that? Or
yeah, I guess. I suppose so. It's just odd. I mean, he's running this piece of software, which then shows what appears to me to be the operating system, but then he's like doing all this stuff with this number afterwards. I don't know.
Well, okay, that makes sense. Okay, so you have the entire RAM.
Yeah.
So gigabyte, a gig of RAM.
Sure.
Okay. And then you say, give me a dump of the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
So it dumps out all the RAM, or is it the whole RAM? Or just the operating system? Well, whatever.
Let's say, assuming you already have the dump file.
Okay, so you already have the dump, right? So this kernel base says, where in this file is my kernel? That's all it says. Mm-hmm. You just have to know that you don't pay attention to the top one, but where are my files, the kernel? Well, you just look at this number and seek. It's like, what line number is the kernel on?
Sure.
That's it.
All right.
Okay?
All right. Have you ever used ssdeep.exe before?
No, it sounds like something sexual, like balls deep. What's SSDeep?
SSDeep is a program that will let you do incremental hashing on a file.
Okay.
Ever done that before?
I don't know what incremental hashing means, but... I mean, I know what it means, but...
It's the same as using WinMerge, except it gives you, like, a, you know...
A hash?
Yeah.
Like that seems useless to me.
Just do that, basically.
So you don't know what it does, then?
Yeah, it does. It takes the file, splits it into, like, I don't know, something like 4 kilobytes, and checks if they're the same, and, like, renders a hash for each portion. In fact, let me just read you a point at which it was used. So it's kind of clever, although I think you could have maybe done it a different way. I would be curious about your opinion on something like that. It's helpful for malware analysis, evidently. And this guy did an SQL injection where he literally uploaded the executable payload into the database in 512-byte chunks and then reassembled them all in the end using, like, SQL commands.
That's sick, dude.
And then fucking executed it, and it worked. Surprisingly. I think that is pretty hardcore. Like, you definitely want to get in there. I guess this is rather useless.
To an extent. Okay.
Let's see. Instances where this technique was used, we were able to extract and reassemble the executable code from the web server logs and then validate that we had a correctly formatted executable file by parsing the PE header. If we had similarly named executables in our archive from previous SQL injection attacks, we used ssdeep to perform fuzzy hash comparison. In most cases, determined the files were 98 to 99% similar. Parsing the PE header to break the executable file down into sections allowed us to identify the sections that changed through MD5 hash comparisons.
Okay, so let's do fuzzy hashing, which is very interesting to me. By the way.
I'm not so sure if it's using that term right. Because, I mean... It takes the file, like this fucking page right here.
Right.
And says, are these the same? Are these the same? Are these the same? Oh, this is not the same. This is the same. And then it tells you...
It's per blocking. It's like a block level hash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So I don't know if that's the same as a fuzzy hash or not. I guess it is.
I guess I'm a noob.
How do you figure?
Well, I got super sidetracked because I didn't have GDB installed when I was positive that this is a debugger. I was positive I had the debugger installed, but so I assumed I was doing something wrong with the way I was calling it, and I got super sidetracked, but I think all I need to do is just install it. Okay, I'm ready to show you this example if you want to see it. So we have gone a little back in time, but I guess this is the same thing. So this is the same file. I just went back in revisions because...
Gotcha.
Whatever. So this is a program, main. Mm-hmm. First thing we do is we make this object, big deal, and then this is kind of complicated, but this says, call this function. If the result does not equal to zero, mm-hmm. then warn me. Mm-hmm. Usually it would say value equals init if value equals zero, but I shortened it by just putting it in there, but... Whatever. So what we're going to do is we're going to call GDB on my thing. And this is all just junk. So I don't need to care about that.
You're really good at ignoring stuff, aren't you?
Well, you're really bad at it because you want to read everything.
It's terrible.
Well, yeah, it is terrible.
It's fucking awful.
So let's... for the basics, let's just start stepping through the program. So let's say... break on main, which means stop once you get to main. So we haven't even run the program or anything. So the first thing we do is we're going to run the program. Immediately it says breakpoint, because the very first thing it did is it's breaking. And actually it's breaking on this line. So I'm going to step into the function, and now it told me that I've changed files, and I'm running this. I'm inside this function. So if we want to see what this function looks like, it's going to be in Redis slave. Slave.c at line 13. So come to line 13 out of whatever, a couple hundred. So this is saying, how long should we wait for the server? 5 seconds, 1.5 seconds. But basically, this is just how to connect to Redis. Like, we don't really care, so I'm going to step through this. So we connect, then you see this line right here. I'm going to step through that step. So now what it's done is that now we are in... We just called connect. So basically, this was main right here. This is what I started writing in main. The very first thing I do is to say, call my own init function. Mm-hmm. For my init function, I also wrote this. It basically says, my timeout is 5 seconds, and then I say, calling this connect function. As soon as I call this Redis connect function, I'm now in the Redis driver. So this is something I downloaded, something I didn't write. But pretty soon I'll come back out, back to code that I wrote. Mm-hmm. So the whole reason I'm showing you any of this... Mm-hmm. Clear, of course, doesn't work. Is because if I let's say this function crashed, mm-hmm. I'd get a crash dump, right? Okay, yeah. So one of the things you get with a crash dump is the backtrace. Did you learn about the backtrace, or did you talk about that? So I type bt. So I can do backtrace now because I'm debugging. I can backtrace wherever I am. It doesn't matter. It just tells me where I've been.
Okay.
So this is a backtrace. So this is what I want you to look at. So. The very first thing it did is we started at main. Now it knows, okay, now since I've compiled this, it knows what file and file number, line number I was on, because I said, please compile this executable with extra information to let me know where each line number is. Normally, when you release, you don't compile with this, although some people have accidentally released programs with the minus G on, and you can honestly pull 99% of the source code right out of the executable. It makes the file a lot larger and it makes it run slower, but... Right. So look, this is the address we were at, dude.
Isn't that sort of a disaster?
That is a disaster.
A disaster.
Yeah, but focus on this though. Look, dude. So this is main. Look, we were at address 4014A8.
Okay, and that's the address of...
The virtual memory.
Gotcha. So if I wanted to determine... Obviously, it's not in real memory anymore, right? But if... Let's say this whole computer crashed or whatever. I wanted to determine, and I had like this log file or something.
Right.
Now I want to find that location in...
The executable?
No. In... Like this is a log file.
Right.
And I have the crash dump separately of this computer right now.
Right.
Pulled the plug.
Okay.
And I want to be able to find that...
Right
there. How would I like do that? Deal with that offset?
Well, this offset is, I believe, the offset in the file. So it's not the offset in RAM.
All right.
Okay. But basically it's saying, so the very first thing we were at is we were at main. So this line in main right now is 4014A8. The next thing we did is we stepped down to...
So wait, assuming I convert that to decimal, what the hell is that?
Okay.
I mean, shouldn't that be something like 1, since this is the beginning?
No.
Like, why would it be all...
Well, there's... Well, okay, for instance, if you want to take a look here... What's 1 in this program, or 0 in this program?
4D.
And what's that?
I don't know. I can't see. Is that an M?
Okay, you're right. And after that is a...
Oh, Z.
Right? So 0 is MZ. 0 and 1 are MZ.
Okay.
So that's... This program doesn't start at 0. This program doesn't even start at... This program must be running...
What's the value?
Well,
the offset.
Okay, yeah, the offset's 0, though. Here, the offset's 50. The offset is this thing right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the program...
Let me ask you another annoying question. Each one of these is a...
Is 2.
Is a D word. Are they not?
A double word?
Isn't that what this is?
Okay, so the term word is very toxic. I really don't like to use the term word. And the reason that is I don't like to use the term word is because a word is CPU specific. So a word on a 32-bit CPU is different than a word on a 64-bit CPU. It's different than a word on your cell phone. It's different than a word at my work. They're all different depending on the CPU.
So what do I call it on a, I don't know.
On a 32-bit system?
On my cell phone, an ARM.
On an ARM? I don't know how many bits is your ARM CPU. Okay, well, that's how big your word is. It's how many bits the CPU is. That's your word size.
Hey, guys, interrupting again. At this point, I clipped out a little bit of Sam and I arguing about what words were on different systems, and I'm just going to leave that out. But the next part, which is about 45 seconds later, we are looking at a hex editor. And the hex editor, on the left, you have all the characters, the hexadecimal values, and on the right, you have the ASCII representation. Or sometimes it's switched. And in the ASCII representation, you know, MZP, those are both 8-bit values. And then if it cannot convert to another 8-bit value, I mean, if an 8-bit value does not convert into a character, it just puts a dot, which basically says, I don't know how to print this, but it has a dot in the ASCII view. But over in the hex view, there is actually a real value.
So this is 8 bits. Each MZP, each dot is 8 bits.
Why is this 10?
Okay, because the address is of 4 bits in a byte. So yeah, the address is of a byte.
Okay.
So when you're in RAM, when you have this many bytes of RAM, you can't read each individual... Basically, you can only get the entire byte at once. So we talk about you having so many bytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. You really should multiply that times 4, because that's how many actual bits you have. That doesn't make sense. Let me start over again. Okay, so the finest resolution that we can talk about is 4 bits together. You don't get any more fine than 4 bits.
Okay.
So, this is 4 bits, this is 4 bits, this is 4 bits, this is 4 bits.
Okay.
These are in hexadecimal. Okay? Okay. 4 bits in a byte. Okay. So, I said that wrong. So, the finest resolution you can read is 8 bits. The finest thing you can get to is a byte. 4 bits in a byte. Yeah, we got that down.
Dude, I'm getting all tripped up. Isn't it?
Eight bits in a byte. Okay, so that's my problem. Okay, so it's 4 bits in a hex.
Full disclosure, it's 3:57 in the morning. Before anyone goes, yeah.
Duh. Yeah, duh.
Okay.
Okay, 8 bits in a byte. So, address 0.
Mm-hmm.
Represents this 4D. That's when you say give me address 0, you absolutely get 4Z.
Okay.
4D. Address 1 is 5A. 2, 3, 4, by the way. So we're at 8 here. If you say, give me address 8, you get this. Give me address 9. Mm-hmm. What's after 9? Sorry.
Dude, I don't know. That's where I'm confused.
It's A, dude. After 9 comes A.
Well, yeah, I know that in hex, but... Are you saying it just goes here and that's why it's 10?
That's why it's 10, because this is in hex.
Because we do the A, B, C, D, F.
Right.
That ends at F.
Yes. So we have A, B, C, D, right? Uh-huh. E and then F, so that's 16.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Thank you.
And then you flip around, and now you're at 10.
Wonderful.
Okay.
That's really not a problem.
No, okay.
Oh, fantastic. Good. No fucking problem. Not a problem at all.
Okay, so we were looking at this, though. We were back to my debug thing. My crash log. So if I were to get a crash log, okay... So this is an offset in the binary, mm-hmm. right? So if I were to do a hex dump on the binary that we're running right now, we would see that there are opcodes mm-hmm. at this very address, which are the beginning of main. This is our beginning. The next thing that we do is we call this function. So we're jumping to a function. So we've jumped, and the jump that we took was at this line right here. So this is a different address. It's incremented by 4 to 8, so that's like, I don't know, more than 200, it's like 256 bytes or whatever. I mean, you can figure out the difference. Something, some number of bytes. And then it tells you where we are. So it basically crashed. We didn't crash, but assuming this was a crash, we crashed at this function. This is where we are. I don't think you can do a crash, can we? Dump. So I can do a dump. I can dump memory. I can dump hex. I can basically do my own crash dump from anywhere I want to in the program.
Excellent.
So when the program crashes, which we've had happen a lot, you know, we could actually we can make it crash if you want to make it crash, dude. Would you like to see that?
Sure.
Okay. So let's just run it. It works fine. Okay. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna come to probably web.c. How can we make this crash really easily?
How have you been using your Dropbox space, dude?
Not.
Me neither. It's totally idle.
It's totally idle.
What does that be?
Oh, it just means it's 4 o'clock in the morning. That's all. That's all.
I see. And this red
thing. Hey, this will make it crash right here. It's that red thing, dude. Shoots the time on the ceiling.
Awful. Gotcha.
So this will make it crash right here, dude. This is a pointer, so there's a point. This is a pointer to a string, so this pointer should be pointing somewhere valid. So it should be pointing to a string, and I'm pointing at somewhere that's invalid. That then print. I'll try to print this, and the kernel will just kill it.
I see.
The kernel will just say, "Fuck you! You can't print that address." So we already have one dump file, but that's a different. This is Redis dump, so it's totally different than what we want. I know that it has the same name dump, but so let's make this and then run it. That didn't do anything. That didn't crash shit, dude. Well, let's crash something else then.
Do you want to delete that so you don't accidentally?
No, it's source control. It's all under source control.
Okay.
I'll just thank you for that, but.
Hey, just saying.
This should make it dump. Let's just add 1,000 in there randomly. Control C. No? Not gonna crash dump? Well. What if we just say this? That might make it crash.
You know, most people have the
opposite problem.
Yeah, it's a pretty good problem to have.
I suppose.
I tried. I couldn't crash.
crash the program.
I'm there. We're gonna get this to happen. I do not know how this program's still running. Am I in the same folder?
Yeah.
I think so. There we go. I got it. So, seg fault.
All right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So, let's see what we got.
Why do they use the word fault, anyway?
It's like a page fault. It's wrong. I don't see a crash file, though. I don't see a dump file. Okay, ask me the next question. We'll see if we can get it to dump something. And now I can get it to crash, so that's something.
All right. Let's see. There's this utility called DT, which can display the e-process structure, which is sort of the, you know, what constitutes a Windows executable. Are you familiar with that?
Say it again?
The e-process structure.
No.
All right. That's okay. I'll figure that out.
I figured out how to get to core. There's there's an application called G-Core, which will allow you to create a core of a running process.
What does that mean?
Well, a dump. It allows you to create a crash dump. They call it a core in Linux. They call it a core, but it allows you to create a crash dump of a running program.
And then make an executable out of that?
Well, no, but you are able to see what was going on.
Right.
So let's do this right now. So my crawler is...
Your crawler always gets out of hand.
Apparently it's not doing much CPU. I don't get why that's not... There it is. So that's the process number is 29,334. So we need to call this...
What is that interesting alt tab thing you have? It's all bitty.
Hold on.
Okay.
G-Core. So G-Core 29,334. Saved core file. Okay, so we do ls... And I don't see it. There it is. Right there.
Isn't that it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So, GDB. Core dot. Okay. So basically I say, I pull up my debugger, I say this is the executable I'm talking about, and this is the memory dump I want you to load. So it basically is able to load, it knows what the executable is, and it knows what the state of the dump was at that memory. So assuming that you had a memory, you were able to do a memory dump mm-hmm. of the Windows, whatever, if you had explorer.exe, I don't know, I don't think that's the root, but what's the Windows kernel called? Is there...
It's called the Windows kernel.
So the Windows kernel executable and the dump... Mm-hmm. You should be able to load it up in a debugger like this.
Gotcha.
So here's my backtrace. It does a mess.
What on earth is that?
So it doesn't know any of the names of the functions.
Oh, so it assigns...
But if I were able to... See, that's confusing me because it starts at zero. Like we said, it wasn't going to start at zero, but it does... This was this. That wasn't the beginning, was it? It wasn't 666. Mm. It might have been this. But one of these is main, and then after that, it's... This looks like some kind of library or something, I don't know, and this looks like it's back to me. I mean, these are all the functions I've called, and so I could see where the program has been. Mm-hmm. And that might help you tell you...
Something.
What it was doing. It might be, they were doing a defragger. Because okay. I'm in the defrag, whatever.
All right. I'm with you.
Okay, good.
Excellent. Pool allocations. I suppose I understand this, that the Windows Memory Manager generally allocates memory in 4 kilobyte pages.
Okay.
Pages are allocated ahead of time, and are thus called pool allocations.
Okay.
I'm not clear on why it does it ahead of time, I guess, to be faster.
Well, it has to do with the swapping thing.
Okay.
So you know how, like, your computer's not doing anything, but you've already, you're swapping all this stuff to disk?
Yeah.
Like, I was talking to my friend, he was like, everything should be in RAM. I should have everything ready to run. If there's nothing on swap, everything should be ready to go right now. With the pre-allocation stuff, basically it's saying, well, this program's probably going to need at least some RAM, mm-hmm. so let's make sure we can get that RAM ready to go in RAM, as opposed to having to swap it later.
Oh, so it's just preemptive.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Vista 7 are a lot better at that than XP ever was. But XP is like instant. The second you go over like the RAM thing, it's like epic slow. It's very obvious. I need to know what Little Indian means.
Okay.
Do you understand this concept in your brain?
I do.
Not a problem?
Not a problem. Although it is, it's so very exciting. Tricky, but it's not a problem. Do you know where it comes from, Little Indian and Big Indian?
No, I don't get it at all.
Well, it comes from Gulliver's Travels. Did you know that?
No.
Okay.
Please help me understand this fully.
Do we have paper we can write on?
Yes.
Do you want to write it on the page, or you want to go to the end? You want to mark where you were?
Let's start right fucking here. Okay. God damn it.
So if you're just reading bytes, it doesn't matter. So let's go to PS Pad here. That's not PS Pad. That's PS Pad. So you're just reading a byte, it doesn't matter. So if you were just going to, let's say we have this right here, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the first, that's what we have here.
All right.
Technically you've got, so basically when you talk to the RAM chip, you say, dear RAM, assuming this was main memory, not virtualized memory.
All right.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. You say, dear RAM, please give me the very first byte you have in your entire existence.
I like you staying in Windows 95 era. We understand Windows 95. Everything's like so simple. It's like, oh, you just run this thing and it's not a problem.
And when it crashes, your whole system goes down. It's really simple. It works great.
You restart it. I don't understand what the problem is. What's your big fucking issue? Jesus Christ.
See, this is address 0. We're just going to do it. I mean, this is 2, 3, 4. This is the very first thing that RAM can ever give you is 0. This is the next thing it can ever possibly give you is 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Now,
so I'm saying, DRAM, please give me these available slots.
Right, and it can't give you anything less. If you wanted to say, because this is 4.
Just give me 1 bit.
It won't do that. Say, it won't give you 4 bits. It gives you 8 bits. Mm-hmm.
And, like, what determines that? Is it on the chip itself or something?
I mean, basically, it's the RAM... it's the RAM chip. So the RAM chips have a couple things. They've got a clock, mm-hmm. and a chip select, okay. and an address, and then a data bus. So basically, you have to say chip select, meaning turn the chip on. Like, it's powered, but it's not... It's, like active, like, please give me... Please listen to me. It's like, listen to me. Mm-hmm. So you put, say, chip select. And then you say, here's my address that I want you to give me. And then you have to, a clock has to pass, or so many clocks have to pass. Okay. So it reads in the address on the, there's 8 pins on the address, or how many pins are up for the address. And then some more clocks pass, and then it's ready to give you the answer. Right? Mm-hmm. So it gives you a data ready line. I'm pretty sure it says the data is ready, that you asked for, the data is ready. And then there's 8 physical pins on the RAM that have zeros and ones, like 0 volts means 0, and let's say 5 volts means a 1.
Gotcha.
And those 8 pins are your byte. And there's a 9th, there's another pin that says the data is ready. So when you see the data ready go high, you say, oh, thank you, I'm taking all of those at once. So it's impossible to get less than that, because that's the physical construction of the RAM chips. Like, you can't.
Excellent.
It's a bus width. So okay. So, let's go to Big Indian real quick here. So,
Okay, so tell me about Gulliver's Travels. What happened that involved an Indian?
So, in Gulliver's Travels, he encounters these little fucking people, and he, like, wakes up on the shore. I think it's the first people he encountered. I think it's the first peoples he encountered in his travels, and they have him tied down, and they're, like, tiny little guys. And he realizes that they're at war with this other island of little people that are very, like, close by or whatever. And what they're at war over is which way you crack your egg, whether you crack it from the little end or the big end when you're eating your hard-boiled egg. That's what they're at war over.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So this term, little Indian versus big Indian, comes from this. So now these, we know that these...
Did you learn this in school?
Yeah. It's a full school. That's college. What's college is for besides cracking your eggs? So we know that these are ASCII.
Okay.
Right? But the computer doesn't, right? The computer doesn't know this. The computer could say, well, let's look at that as if that was an integer. I mean, they're just bits.
Okay.
It's okay, your integer is a number.
Right.
Right?
Which is why I paused, because that is not an integer.
Right. So let's go here. So we have, let's just look at, well, okay, let's look at 4D, the most basic, okay?
Okay.
If we go to decimal, 77.
Sure.
Okay. Fuck you. So you're familiar with this image here, maybe? Have you seen this before? This is very common. I've seen this like every day of my life, so that's why I'm
no.
So let's look at 4D.
Is that just the
yeah.
The stuff from your keyboard translated to hex? What the hell is this? Okay.
So what's 4D?
Well, why do you look at this every day of your life?
It's a common programmer thing, dude.
Okay.
4D is what? What's a 4D?
M. Yeah.
Right?
Nifty.
And then Z is going to be 5A, so we come to 5A... Z.
Excellent.
Now, if you notice what the, if you notice that there's decimal, hex, don't care, but oct is very little used, but it's there in char.
Okay.
So we were at 4D, right? So what is, if you have hex 4D, what's the decimal value of 4D?
Is that 13?
No, let's try again.
77.
Where's 13?
I just went all the way over to the left.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's weird, but it's, yeah.
Gotcha.
So, 77. So, if you said, dear computer, give me the very first byte of RAM that you have, mm-hmm. print it out like a character, you get a M.
Gotcha.
If you say, dear computer, give me the very first byte that you have and print out like an integer, you get...
77.
Right.
Sure.
So, but integers are bigger than just 8 bits or 1 byte. Let's just do this. Integers are usually the word size. So on a 32-bit computer,
it could be very long.
Well, 32-bit, yeah. So 32-bit computer, our word size is 32 bits, meaning that we'd have 8. 16 something 32 24 32 or something bullshit. So this would be an entire integer. Okay. So what's that? So you can count up to 4 billion, but that looks bigger than 4 billion to me. I wish I could select that.
You can just hit Control C. It will copy it.
I can hit what?
Just control, yeah, like that.
Yeah, like that, bitch.
But, yeah.
So that's 7 million. Looks like, oh. It looks like in the trillion somehow, but I don't know why that... 16, 32 bits. It should be 32. Not that I'm going to count. I guess PSPAC can count it.
Like when you discovered that Facebook thing.
Yeah.
That was very interesting.
That's 40. What am I doing wrong here? How? Try this again. Oh, I might put the 2 in. Yeah, I put the 2 in. I put that in, which we can't. It's not legal. So this number looks a lot better. Thousand, million, billion, trillion. So that's 1,297,000,000,000. No. No, this, okay, this is wrong. So it's 297 million because it has 6 zeros after it. So 1,297,000,000.
Okay.
Okay. We got that. You're a number, you're a math, you're a money guy, so you should know that. So this is Little Indian. And why it's Little Indian is because the least significant byte comes last.
Okay.
If we were to say,
wait, how do you know that?
Well, because okay, so big Indian means that the least significant byte comes first.
But at this point, with just this number, you can decide that arbitrarily.
No, you can't. The okay. CPU decides it. So little Indian versus big Indian describes the CPU, and it has to do with the word size. So, like, remember we said the smallest thing you could do was a byte. Mm-hmm. So okay, so. For Little Indian, which is how Intel is a Little Indian, I think ARM is also Little Indian.
Okay.
What it means is that this is the little end, meaning that these have the least effect on the number. So if I were to change this to a 1, we're only going to go up to 5, 3. It's the little part.
Gotcha.
So these are the least. This is more significant, and then most significant. Big Indian, you just flip that around. So if we were to look at this number in Big Indian, it would still be this in memory, but the CPU would read this as 45A.
So it's just reading it from a different way?
It's just reading it from a different way.
The values are reading, it's reading the values the same.
The value is totally, I mean,
okay.
But if you took the RAM from a Little Indian system and dumped it on a Big Indian system,
reverse. They'd look
it would crash instantly and the numbers would all be, right. I mean, yeah. But if we want to know what it is, though, what we can do is we can reverse it ourselves. And remember, you don't flip these individually because your smallest unit is a byte. You don't mess around inside the bytes, but it's what you do at the byte level. So if we wanted to know what a big Indian system would read, we have to flip it and then put it in a little Indian system. Because this is little Indian here. Mm-hmm. Everything is little Indian, basically, except for my work, which is big Indian, but let's put that at the point. If we want to know, this is, everything is a little Indian, right? If
well, we wanted why to, are most things in the little Indian?
Because it just makes sense.
Because, okay.
That's how you write numbers.
And why is your stuff at work big Indian?
Because Motorola is a fucking idiot. That's why. They're one giant idiot. It's the wrong way. I don't know. Whatever.
Is it the wrong way, though?
It is, yeah. It doesn't matter for efficiency. It just matters for programmer sanity.
All right.
Right, so,
I was just going to show you why this bugged me so much when this, like, issue arose. It was because, Jesus, what a disaster.
Yeah, you lost your place, so.
Well, that's my fault.
Okay, we were, like, 1 or 2, yeah, for that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah?
Thank you very much. So, due to Indian issues, the signature
key and cell value are inverted.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be key value, but then, like, when you look at it, it's VK instead. I was like, KN, yeah, and NK, like, they're inverted.
Right, yeah, right.
That annoyed the fuck out of me. I was like, what are you talking about right now? Like, what the hell?
What is Little Indian issues?
And I have a feeling this guy has no idea what that means either. That's why he, like, said it all fast.
Yeah.
Indian issues.
Yeah. So,
those are my quotes, by the way.
So, if we want to know what a big Indian machine would print this out as, we don't have a big Indian machine. I'm sorry. If we want to know what a beginning machine, if we gave this one memory, say, what is it going to be? The only way that we can predict what it's going to print out is by reversing it and giving it to a little needed machine. That's the only way we know. Because we don't have a beginning machine at our disposal, right? Hmm. That makes, is that clear?
I think so.
Okay. And this is going to be a much smaller number.
So this whole thing is arbitrary just because some companies decided to do it that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is this a legacy thing? Like,
it's a legacy. The standard is Lilindian. That's how everyone is. No one's going to change it in the future.
But it became that way now.
Yeah.
After things caught on.
Yeah.
And so a company like Motorola is quite old school.
Yeah. And these chips are really old school.
Yeah. So that's why theirs is stuck with that, because they would have to change that stuff. And they're like, well, our tools are set up for this.
And the silicon and et cetera, all the tools, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of a big deal. So that's why there's this D&D issues. Huh. Okay, that's really extremely helpful.
Spark.
What
is at version 9, Spark is bi Indian. Looks like it's like just bisexual.
Zoom in again.
Okay.
Oh.
This is funny.
What the hell? Let me find that part. But yeah, okay. That's. Yeah. I don't know.
You know what? Arm is big Indian.
So.
So here's basically this is what we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
If you're just reading one byte, it's the same. It looks exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But with Little Indian, you read them. Yeah, maybe I got it wrote backwards, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
I understand.
Oh, yeah, no. We got it right. Yeah, we got it right. Mm-hmm. Basically, D, for whatever reason, D is least significant, which they don't mark on the thing, but they should have said that. But so when you change D, it means... Yeah, whatever. We're done. Next thing. Okay. I'm just double-checking.
That was pretty good. It just made me wonder, like, why even bother telling me what the signature is if it's going to be inverted anyway? You may as well just tell me the inverted one.
But he was making an attempt to understand it, but he didn't do a good job, obviously.
Yeah, he said, here's the thing. Oh, and it's inverted just because.
Yeah.
Like,
because of Indian issues. Well, you know.
Like, at least you knew that. Thanks. Okay. All right. So cool. Good to know that's inverted, because I think you have to search for it. If you're searching for that signature, search for it in reverse then.
Right. You flip the bytes.
Okay. So then why does that MZ show up not inverted in that?
Because we're all Little Indian. Everything's Little Indian. And besides, it's a string is different than integers.
Okay.
Because remember we said that if it's only one byte long, it doesn't matter which order you're in. Mm-hmm. And you can look at a string as an array of bytes, as an array of character, a character array. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that if you had an array of big Indian things, it'd be really complicated because you'd have to jump and then flip them in order to understand what it was.
Mm-hmm. And go up through the array.
And flip them as you go. Whereas with the string... Since they're only one byte long, they just
get flipped. Okay, but I mean, we're talking about... What are we doing here? We're talking about digging through the registry and then looking at, I think, parts of the registry.
So for whatever reason, they are storing it big Indian, or for whatever reason... They're storing it like that.
Alright. I can hang with that. Good to know. It sounds to me like basically sometimes you have to search for something forward, sometimes reverse.
Depending on the CPU, in this case, depending on how the program was written.
Okay. Okay. This is something I just need to look up. Okay, so if he tells me that something, if someone gives me a hex value like this,
right.
And I have no other context, and they tell me, oh, that's in Little Indian.
Right.
What does that mean?
Like, that means that if you were, that means you don't. You know it because I told you.
Yeah, but do I know, am I reading it correctly then by just
I just know that this, at least...
It means that if you... Okay, they say it's in Little Indian. Mm-hmm. It means that you can put this into a calculator on Windows mm-hmm. and get out an integer, and it's going to be right.
Okay. But if they tell me it's a big integer format...
You're going to have to switch every two. So you're going to have to put a comma and then switch them.
What if I load my calculator on my Motorola phone?
Well, then you don't need to. If they told you it was big Indian, you wouldn't need to switch it.
But if I really do load up a calculator on my Motorola phone, isn't that all... It's not going to, like... It's,
no, yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly, yeah, right. Yeah. That's all handled, obviously.
So then there's a... Okay.
So what?
I don't know, nothing, that's fine. it's so fucking abstract.
Well, for you, yeah, for your level of necessary knowledge, it's fully abstract, yeah.
Do variables usually have a money sign? Why is there a money sign?
It depends on the language, but yeah, PHP does, and yeah.
Okay. Is there a history thing about that? Like the Indian thing you can tell me? Why a money sign?
Why it's a dollar sign?
Yes, why? Why?
No.
Oh, God. Okay, so they just had to pick a symbol.
Yeah, what was the hashtag? Was it the dumb questions, or what was it?
Yeah, it was very simple.
That
is a completely reasonable question. Like, why not a carrot? Why the fuck is it a dollar sign? Someone made the decision.
Yeah, someone made the decision.
The guy who made the control-alt-delete, he explained why he did it.
Why?
He said you couldn't do it by mistake. Easy to memorize. You knew you were doing it if you did it. The
yeah.
end.
Yeah.
Good. So why is it fucking dollar sign? Alright. This thing is very confusing. The last write time of a registry value, for example, is stored as a file... I meant to write file time object. But yeah. File time object.
Okay.
File time object.
Okay.
Or structure. That represents the number of 100 nanosecond intervals since 1/1/1601. This is how Microsoft stores time. 1601, yeah, the Georgian calendar. Did you know Microsoft does this? They're hardcore, dude.
They're not using the epoch time?
Not for certain things. What? Some things they use the Unix time or whatever the hell you call it. And then other ones, which is epoch time. I think that those are analogous.
They're not. Or not. What do you mean analogous? Wait.
The epoch time thing.
Yeah, is a Unix time thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this thing is like planned out for like 10 million years in the future for some reason with the registry. And other.
Because they're using a 32-bit. They're using probably 64-bit or 128-bit values.
That's pretty hard.
Does it tell you how many bits it is? What's the name of the structure?
It's called file time object. And you can here's a knowledge base if you're so inclined.
Which is
724280.
724280.
Don't write KB because it's one of these library things. It's different. If you search that number, it should probably come up.
Without KB?
Yeah.
That's supposed to be a slash, motherfucker. Amazing!
Yeah. Okay. So I get this mess.
Okay, so back to our bookmark.
Alright. So I got my file time object, which that makes perfect sense.
Thanks. Okay, great.
Wonderful file time object. I have a feeling that this guy doesn't quite know that. Okay. Based on the Georgian calendar. I have to convert it to system time using the file time to system bracket API.
Right. Does that kill you?
No, I'm using this thing. I just don't know how I'm going to personally use that API. Well,
you would look it up, but if you came to this webpage here,
which will then display the date in GMT/UTC.
So if you were a programmer, which you're not, basically, let's look this up, dude. I bet you someone has written this.
Well, yeah, it's like it's incorporated in a lot of these.
Look, dude, ready? Mm-hmm. I could write this for you in JavaScript.
So cool you understand that enough to be able to write something in JavaScript.
Well, all you need is an example. of one input and one output.
Where you say all I do is copy and paste stuff?
Well, no. I would look what the conversion rate was. I mean, it doesn't look very simple, but all I would need is a single example to then be able to check my work, and then I would know it's done.
Do people copy and paste your code a lot?
My GitHub is very small. I don't have anything on GitHub. But I'm putting something on GitHub in the next week or two at work, which is WebSockets. I don't see it. I'll draw an example.
Is there any advantage to that?
What, Java?
You putting stuff on GitHub.
Getting a job.
Oh.
And people upgrading your shit. Those are the two examples. Basically, there's a PHP file that I really want to modify, that I really want to use. It's for a web standard that expired like 3 months ago. So 3 months ago, great. Now Chrome's revved. Everyone's revved on the new web standard. Doesn't work anymore. So we need to update this file to match the new web standard. So why would I hide that? That makes no sense. I need to write it for myself.
Yeah, it'd be a mess.
I'm taking open source code, mm-hmm. and I'm just doing like 10 lines that are changed. I have an example. So like I said, I have an example of what the input and the output is. And I captured it in Wireshark. I went to a website that was using the standard, captured in Wireshark.
Nice.
Then I came, there's a website, I basically needed to find the right website. Like, we don't have a website for you, but for me it was a hash. I needed to know what a SHA-1 hash was. Mm-hmm. The first SHA-1 hash I found didn't work for what I needed, so I just moved on. But having that example allowed me to test, do I have a website that allows me to do these hashes? Even though I could do it in PHP, it's really easy for me to do it in the website. So I have my input. Basically, what you're supposed to do is it gives you a string. The browser gives your server a string. Your web server takes a fixed string. It's always the same thing. Adds it on and then hashes it and sends it back.
I see.
So I need to be able to do that. So whatever. I don't see... So I don't see anyone having done this, dude. You can do it in VB. I don't have any VB to show you how to do that, but you could definitely do it in VB.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Okay, why don't you? Why doesn't it exist? Why don't you make a converter on variable ignorance?
I will probably end up doing that.
And you can just use it yourself and then tweet it, and people will come there.
So, tweet it.
What?
I don't know.
I was up all night one night, or up really late, and I was like, yeah. And then at 5 in the morning, all the birds started tweeting, and I couldn't go to sleep. And someone made a lot of fun of me for using that word. And I was like, what? They chirp? What do they tweet? What?
Yeah, what's your problem?
You're like, were they on Twitter? I was like, fuck you. It was 5 in the morning.
Like the birds, that's what they do.
That's what they do. They tweet. Yeah.
And then I convert to local time, accounting for daylight savings.
Yeah, so that's the next step.
Local system and run it through file time to local time, which is different than file time to system time.
Yeah.
God damn it. If I fuck any of this up, it'll be such a mess.
Well, you'll know. That's why you need an example. You should get some JavaScript tools that'll let you do that and put them on the website. I know that's... Maybe you have to ask me to do that or whatever, but then it's on the web and you know it's right.
Okay.
Next question.
Okay. In Windows, there's shares, you know? These standard shares.
Yeah, C colon, yeah.
Signs, Y. Yeah.
Why money signs?
Yeah, nice.
Don't know.
Because it's
after. You know they exist, right?
Yeah. I've always known that. I just don't get it, really. I don't know why. Anyway, I can look it up. I'm just curious if you know why they would use it. It's a curious thing to put it after.
C-cache? Oh, it says C-colon. Basically, obviously, they did it because they needed a character. As caches are legal or illegal in file names?
What's a cache?
Caches. A dollar sign is legal or illegal in a file
name? Caches. It's illegal.
Really?
Fully illegal.
So you fully know that. That's why they did it then.
Dude, you can't do that.
I just did.
You fucking cannot. Okay, fine.
For the record, I just typed a dollar sign in a file for Sam. Bastard.
You can do dots. You don't know what they are? You don't know what they are?
Slash.
Yeah.
I thought that a money sign was there.
Not.
Oh, lied to me. Okay. That's so annoying. That
thanks for renaming my file, you slut.
Dude, you already renamed it.
Well, I could figure out.
Control Z?
Control Z is only going to work once. Oh, it works great. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So we use that because for no reason I can really tell.
No, because it's not. It's illegal in the file name, so they needed something in Samba that they could differentiate it, so they could just filter it out by it.
Okay.
You don't even want to hear the answer now that I'm trying to tell you.
No, I do. Like, that makes sense. That's good. That's excellent. Inter-process communications. Okay. Is a share. IPC. Are you familiar with that share?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Moving right along. You must be exhausted.
You must be more exhausted. You're up 24 hours right about now.
Yes.
I like how you look. Correct. I like how you look there, and the time I look there because I'm a Mac guy. I mean, they're both there, but
you have. Oh, I was gonna say if you had another VM open, you'd have three system times open.
Yeah, no.
Two is good enough, I suppose. Finding SSIDs in the registry. Dude, the registry is so much. Dude, do you have any idea how scary the registry is?
I've been through the registry one key at a time. I mean, I've been not through the one key at a time, but I've been through.
That's so fucking hardcore. Like 5 years.
I've been through the registry, dude. I know. I was in high school. It happened.
It's just terrifying. Like I can know so much stuff over every fucking thing based on so much stuff in the registry. And then you like cross-reference with logs and it's like you're so screwed.
With log. Okay, yeah. Sure.
There's so many logs, dude. They just have so much crap. Oh, terrible.
What are you looking at now?
It's a noise. Is that your server in there?
Yeah. You can open the door if you want. Just slide it back.
Is this the...
That's the epic one, yeah.
Epic, like, 50 million VMs
in here? Yeah, yeah.
Legendary.
You'll see what it's doing?
Dude, the thing rules.
So it looks like I have some CPU... Like, something is eating up this with one of the CPUs.
Thank God it's not idle. Whatever it is.
Pretty constant. Interesting. Look at that, dude. That's every 10 minutes. So over 10 minutes is this entire window.
That's going to be hard to track down with so many VMs open.
Yeah. I'm only using half my RAM, dude. That top RAM is all idle.
I'm going to need that RAM. Or something.
It's not... I'm pretty sure it's the Windows XP. Well, that's not anything either.
Sounds like you need more VMs loaded.
Shut your mouth.
How much RAM do you have in that thing?
8. Gigs? What, is that a lot?
Mm-hmm. Not for like an epic VM farm. You can always use more. Yeah. I guess, but you're only using half, so that's fine.
You don't know where that's coming from. Okay, anyways, close.
I want to stall that at 90 to 95%.
It's hard to be network, disk, and CPU bound all at the same time.
Dude, it's where you want
to
be.
I know, but it's hard to do.
I'm going to charge people for
it's
stuff.
Not an easy curve. Like if you're writing a software program, that's really a hard curve to hit because usually you're just going to be CPU bound, or it really depends what you're doing, right? So,
dude, it's epic. In 2006, I suddenly left to go to Hong Kong.
Okay.
I abandoned my employers with an awful series of temps that they just could not handle the workload.
Yeah.
And they relied on Microsoft Word's automatic table of authorities and table of contents, like generators. Goodness. Like, I'm sure that those features work very well. I've just never seen it happen because you have to follow Microsoft rules.
Of course, right.
You know, you have to have your IT department plan ahead of time and That's not going
to
happen.
Active Directory has to know what your table of contents looks like.
Yeah,
right?
Like, I mean, stuff like, needs, the planets need to align. And when it does, it's awesome.
Yeah, but
usually it doesn't when you're a smaller firm because nobody quite knows how to use the software. They know it by like 40%, 60%.
Yeah.
It's not good enough.
You need 90 to 100%.
Yeah, 90 to 100 to rely on it the way you want to rely on it.
Exactly.
So, they friggin' filed this brief in this Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been Supreme, but probably the Court of Appeals. Pretty high court. It was a big profile case. $500 million at stake. And the whole thing is riddled with error, bookmark not defined. It fucking looks so unprofessional. I was like, this is a disaster.
Gosh.
The font would sometimes change.
Oh,
I was
man.
Like, what is going on here? I fucking leave for a month. This is a disaster. So they're like, we need to file this errata. This is so embarrassing. I have to go in front of the judge with this like 10-page errata. I'm like, so I prepared the errata and like fixed all the problems. It just was, yeah, it was a fucking mess. So I'm a big fan of Wonder Products. It's just sort of this funny thing where you're like, yeah, I fucked up, and here's all the things I fucked up. Oh my god. And so I wrote like on page 15 where it says error bookmark not defined. Actually meant to say the following. It was really annoying, because you're gonna be reading through this book and then like with the errata. So old school. But yeah. Should just be like, judge, look, I'm just getting a million new versions. Is that cool?
No. Yeah. No errata. Just rev. Just, yeah. Okay, next question.
Okay, system restore restores all these things. COM plus database, WMI database.
My boss's system restore doesn't work. Just refuses to work.
On your boss's computer?
Yeah. And so we have this problem where Chrome won't install, and he's convinced it's because the Windows directory is in all capital letters as opposed to like a normal Windows directory.
Did he upgrade it?
He won't upgrade. It won't upgrade. It says upgrade service down, even though it's actually a problem with the install. Like if you dig down, it basically says it can't find this file. It's a mess.
Is it SFC on it?
I don't know what that is.
SFC / scan now. System file checker.
Oh, I'm sure everything will come back fine. I mean, I don't know.
Pirated?
I have no idea. Possibly. But you can't get the newest version of Chrome, and that sucks because, yeah. Anyways, yeah.
System restore restores files with extensions listed in the include portion of the monitored filed extensions list in the system restore section of the platform SDK.
So it's going to be exe.dll dot a couple other things. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a system file extension.
Yeah, no images, no MP3s.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Good deal. Just all technical stuff. Nothing fun.
Mm-mm.
What the hell's a COM plus database? You know offhand? No, I'll look it up. Don't bother.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if you know offhand.
No.
Do you understand the difference between WMI and a registry?
What's WMI stand for?
Windows Management Instrumentation.
No.
Okay. What the hell? You know about IIS, right?
No. About what?
Internet Information.
Oh, yeah. IIS. Yeah. Yes. I know what that is.
Metabase. What the hell's the difference between a metabase and a database? What is a metabase?
A metabase is a collection of meta files, I'm assuming. Either that or it's a metabase is, well, meta means about itself, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, if you have a meta photo, if you have a meta photograph, it's a photograph of someone taking a photograph.
Okay.
If you have a meta podcast, it's a podcast about podcasting. Okay. So if you have a metabase, it's a database about, either about the database, mm-hmm. it's probably a database about the database.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Sure.
Hey guys, it's me again. I would probably argue that the metabase is a database about the system restores and different things that happen in the system restore. So it's sort of a collection of information about the data. That makes the most sense to me.
Dude, the system restore backs up the SAM Hive.
Which, yeah, I know what SAM is.
What does it stand for? You know, security.
No, but
account.
I know SAM for very. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, it backs up part of the SAM Hive, but it does not restore it.
What? Okay. That means if you like delete a user, it's not coming back.
Yeah. So like you could.
If you change your password, if you change your password, it's not coming back.
Exactly.
If you did a system restore, if you change your, that does make sense though.
Yeah. Security problem. Unless I can just restore and get your shit back or something.
Well, no, it means if I do a... If you do a system restore every time you start a computer, or not restore, but a system checkpoint every time you start a computer, that means that if I change my password today and then wanted to go back 2 days ago...
Yeah, you'd be locked out.
Yeah, so the password would stay the same. So that makes sense.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, it's a forensic goldmine because it just, like, hangs out.
Sure.
And, like, snapshot of system restore. It's like, win. Yeah. And I'm like, ah, you didn't fucking log into that account, and you did look at kitty porn. I'm like, no, I didn't. Someone else, the hacker, did it.
Yeah, the hacker did it.
It's bad. Let's see. Stuff is missing from Windows Vista. How tired are you? Ping?
We're working on it.
Okay. Did you know you can get to... You know how you can't CD into system volume information? Access is denied.
Okay, right. You can own it to yourself and then get in there?
Yeah, you can log in as system.
Oh.
By using PSXX negative S CMD.
Okay.
Log in, and then you can log in and, like, fuck around there and make a big fucking mess.
Cool. What is system volume information again, by the way?
It has system restore points.
But doesn't it... I feel like it has information on my file system or some bullshit on there. Like, it's empty. Or, I guess I can't get into it. Okay, so that's the problem. I can never get into it. What's in there?
PSXX.
I don't have that.
Oh, for God's sakes.
It's my VIA. Sidetrack. No, I'm over it. I'll figure it out. It's not happening at all.
You were about to, though.
Yeah, it was. That's close.
Jesus Christ. Oh, what the fuck is going on here? Oh, you know about user SIDs, right? Security IDs.
Maybe.
In Windows.
Are they saved in the SAM file?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So then, yeah, I know what they are.
Do you know what
if it's in the SAM file, I've seen it.
Okay. I don't know what the hell my question was about that. I know that SIDs exist. I just don't quite know what they're used for. They're just like, is it just like a randomly generated...
It's like a UID.
Okay. Used for security
purposes. Wait. So let's do that. If we do this right here...
Oh, yeah, you'll be able to get in there and see all that stuff.
Oh, well, all I have to do is just say properties... is it permissions? Where's the permissions thing?
What do you...
If I share something with someone... Well, let's see. This folder is shared right here. It's kind of sharing. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all you have.
Yeah, pretty much.
But there was that advanced button.
That's under here. Alt key.
Where the fuck is it? No. Where is it?
It's Samba. It's in there. Whatever. We could look at my Windows 7 computer and figure it out.
Yeah. Don't worry. Oh my god, he turned on a new computer.
I do computer.
Oh god, at 5:20 in the morning. That's probably a new record for you. Let's see.
Not even close. There's no new record for when I turn my computer on at any time of the day. It's been done every minute of every hour, dude. It's guaranteed.
That's probably true. Signs of an SQL injection on an IIS server. NVARCHAR. What the fuck is that?
Varchar?
What the hell's an NVARCHAR?
Okay, so you mentioned this a while ago when we were talking about the 73 bytes plus the length of the...
Uh-huh. The variable length.
And then you said, oh, well, they'll probably just pad that out. Uh-huh. So what a varchar is in a database, it basically says you have a string, mm-hmm. and the string is allowed to be up to this many characters.
All right.
And in the database... you lose that space. So if you say have a string...
Because it's reserved. Gotcha.
That way, if I want the 56th thing... What, you want the keyword?
Where's your keyword? Oh, it's Okay.
I'll get in real quick. So that way, if you want to get into the 55th record in the database... Mm-hmm. If you know each one's 100 characters long, you say, what's the base address? Remember, base address?
Yes.
Times 100 times 55. And you just jump in the file. You know that's where your record is.
All right. Makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Because you got the pads.
So right, all, yeah, right, right.
It all works. NVARCHAR. Okay. So,
I guess.
So what was your question? Oh, so
I don't
we know
how well, that helps me.
Well, ask Joe in directions, dude.
All right.
Signs? Okay, so what? You have questions about what the signs are that you have SQL injections on your ISS server, or do you not care about ISS?
IIS.
What
is it? And varchar? Like, how am I going to look for that? What does that mean?
That's what this means. Let's go. Well, there was a webpage that I had found that had SQL injection, but they fixed it, so we can't try it. Although, you know, actually that website's down too. So let's try it. Let's try the website. Let's try our podcast.
Is our site totally vulnerable to all sorts
is
of...
Is your site points? Totally vulnerable?
No, Port 4 Podcast.
No, I've known Variable Gigahertz. Oh. Variable Gigahertz is older than Port 4 Podcast is. I know for a fact.
What do you mean?
I mean, you have an older version of WordPress than I do.
Oh, yeah, I haven't updated it.
Right, so then, yes, you're vulnerable. Okay, so why
to what,
are you
though?
Asking?
What am I vulnerable
to? To SQL injections, dude. It's always what it is.
I'm so fucked. It's always what it is.
That's the only way you can get a new website, is SQL injection.
Okay.
I mean...
I gotta update it then, I guess. Fuck my life.
This is how you do it, dude. You do this. Okay? So, okay, do you get how this works? Okay, so this is a bad example, but...
I'm gonna, like, zoom in, like, really fucking big. Okay.
So, in your source... Let's look at this here. In the source code, this is some standard SQL. It's just saying, select all of the properties of every user.
Mm-hmm.
That's what star from means.
Yeah.
Where the user's name is Sam.
Okay.
Okay, the problem is... Oh, so what this looks like, by the way, is... It's a little bit... God damn it. So now I'm in a different operating system. So what this looks like is... I'll zoom in, don't worry.
Don't worry. I was worried you were worried.
So it looks like... So let's go to this double quote. Here's this double quote. So this is what the
database prices,
right,
or whatever.
Obviously, yeah. Cache username is Sam or whatever. Sure. So let's just put in Sam. Okay. Now, what happens if we take that instead of Sam, we put in this.
Put in the following.
So 1, 2, 3, paste. Now, what do we have?
Okay, where the username is blank.
Or
one.
No. Or means you have to start, so it's select star from users, and then it's where that's what it is. Does that make more sense to you?
No. It made way more sense before. Why do you just, like, do that? Oh, I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Okay, so now you make sense, right? Because name doesn't equal one, one equals one, and there's an extra one of these things.
Okay, select all users where the name
is blank, so that's always going to be false. But then there's no going to be, you assume there's not going to be any blank users.
Right.
But you don't care because you say, or does one equal one? Yes, one always equals one.
Okay.
So this may, or depending on how the website works, this may or may not log you in as the first user, which may or may not be admin. So,
okay.
So if we do this, let's try this. So I'll put in, we'll put this in, but I'll put in my real password.
Try it on.
It's nuts.
It's not going to work.
Not going to work yet. Okay. But if you see SQL errors come back, let's see if we can do SQL injections. We can images of SQL injection.
It's not that idle. We got stuff going on.
Let's run the web crawl and see what happens. Let's do SQL. So, that's not a good one. That's not a good one at all. How do I go back, you slut? Oh, we don't have any good examples. But basically, if you put in something like this thing that we have here,
mm-hmm.
and you start to see SQL errors being generated back,
mm-hmm.
it means that you have broken out of
your thing. So basically, you should only be allowed to enter something in here.
Yeah, I understand. It should just tell you no.
Right, and you should not be allowed to put a single quote in, because as soon as you put a single quote, you've broken out of that string. Because right. SQL says this is a string. Anything after the single quote is now mm-hmm. commands. Mm-hmm. So you've broken out of the string part, and now you're adding commands in. So
I'm with you.
Yeah. So
and it somehow should be coded to whatever it is.
Before you put the string, before you construct this thing, mm-hmm. you say remove all of the bad things from the string, and then add it in. So right. you guaranteed you only have two single quotes on either side.
Gotcha. You can code that thing to comment out stuff.
Well, basically,
when you do that backslash before the thing?
Escaping. But usually what you do is you sanitize it.
What does that mean?
Well, sanitize means you just delete it. I mean, you could escape it means you keep the values by putting a backslash in.
So you're just telling, you program it to say it's just not acceptable ever.
Yeah, just delete them or just bail. Either try it with the characters removed or just abort.
Gotcha. So many computers, so many drives. Red Snow.exe. Oh my goodness. Okay. In varchar. Dude, are you stoked about iOS 5?
No, I think that's for shit.
Okay.
Here it is. Security bullshit.
What is that mess? The third one.
This one?
Oh, B. Okay, B. I gotcha.
So doesn't it show B here? So it doesn't show it then. But there is like a 00006 or something associated with that. The SID, what's the SID look like?
It's really long.
Is it random the whole way through? Like 64, 7, 4, kill me, please, now?
No. It's epic long, though.
Okay, next. Yeah. So you got SQL injections down.
Yes. You have to be like familiar with SQL syntax to be able to write something like that. Since I'm not, it's hard for me to sort of know what'll work and what won't work. I get it, you know. It's just, I wouldn't know how to write one of my own.
And you also have to realize that you're in a part of another query. So you have to deal with the query. First thing you have to do is get rid of that query. Mm-hmm. Like what you can do sometimes is you can, so we were supposed to have it like Sam, right? What you can do, I'll zoom in for you. What you can do is you can do something like this. So you put a single quote in, mm-hmm. and then you close it.
Right.
And then you say, drop Sam from my DB. Mm-hmm. And then you have to deal with the quote somehow. You have to, because you know that there's going to, then you have to deal with both ends.
Right.
So then SQL will run these in sequence.
There was a thing where one of these dudes, he like commented out the rest of it somehow.
That's what you
Does
do.
Does that work?
Yeah, you do that.
I thought that was...
There you go, right here.
I thought that was pretty fucking clever.
So then you put a comment.
Clever, right?
Or comment to block the rest of the query. That is clever. I didn't even thought about that. So then you just put a comment in.
Yeah, and it's like, it's over.
It's done. You're just dropped Sam table. Or drop table, or whatever it's called. Yeah.
So harsh. So I'm going to get SQL injected. God damn it. On variable gigahertz is really embarrassing. Okie. Log file is actually the old name associated with this thing. Dr. Watson 32.
Okay. I know what that is.
Produces user.dmp, which contains private pages used by the process at the time of the exception.
Okay.
And does not contain code pages from executable files.
Correct.
Okay.
What does that mean? Do you want to know what that means?
I would like to know what that means.
So, private memory pages, I believe everything's a private memory page. Yeah, I'm pretty sure every exe has it. I should close it. Gently, if you... So this is Windows 95 versus Windows 98. Once you get to Windows 98, processes have private memory pages.
Right.
pretty much every page that a process has is in private. It's not going to be sharing it with anything except for maybe the operating system, maybe, right?
So, I only get to have 5, 6, only 3 years of Windows 95 heaven before everything got all complicated.
Yeah.
God damn it. So...
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Shows what they're saying is when it dumps...
You don't care about code pages, because what code page is
literally, it's literally the contents of the exe loaded into RAM.
Well, that can be useful at times. For example, viruses are often encrypted. They have other obfuscation methods, so you have to pull them from memory in order to get the unencrypted version of it.
Okay, so I didn't even think about that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You can't figure out what the fuck it's doing. But yeah, okay. So, okay.
I feel like I'm getting sick all of a sudden. I feel like my lymph node is seriously swelling up right now.
Well,
I'll fix that problem.
You've been up for a what? How are you going to fix that problem?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
Keep working.
There's this quote that was confusing to me. For NTFS, the last access time has a resolution of 1 hour.
Okay.
What the hell does that mean? A resolution.
You know what that means? We already know what that means because we talked about it. It means it can only be 1 hour or 2 hours. It can't be half an hour.
The last access time can't be half an hour.
It has to be on the hour. Resolution is the finest thing you can get.
What's the problem? Because what if I last accessed the file at 5:37 a.m.? It's only going to tell me 5
yeah.
a.m.?
Because that's how it's stored. Let's see what it says.
That sucks.
Well, that's not it's disabled.
Do it on an XP system because it's disabled by default on Vista and 7 for last accessed. Did you know that? Yes, you did, because I told you once before.
No, but okay.
Yeah, I did. Because I remember asking
I don't about care
the
what
performance
you...
difference. And well, you said it does actually make a difference.
It does make a difference.
Yeah.
Look at that. It makes no sense to me, but whatever.
1060. Modified. Yeah, so it's not a resolution of an hour.
No, it's not a resolution of 1 second, but whatever.
Fucking lied to me. Son of a bitch. Mm.
I think it actually could be both. I think it could actually be correct. I actually believe mine is correct.
Okay.
This could it could be just everything could be 28. Like if I looked at the next file, it could be on the 28th. That would still be resolution of 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I understand.
Let's take a look. 27.
Zoom in. Jesus.
Let's go to some totally different file, like this file. Nope, totally different. So I don't know. All of those were in the 20s, but...
Okay. Interesting. What would be the purpose of that anyway? Why would they have such...
Well, remember the other one that was a resolution of 100 nanoseconds?
Yeah.
That means resolution.
Right.
Right. So make sure you think about that in your brain.
Gotcha.
The point of that is that so, back. Put your business card in here and go to the end of your book.
Good.
So remember, this is a number. So let's just look at the number 40. Was it 5 something? 40. What's the next one?
5A.
5A. So this is a number, 19,000.
Okay.
Okay, what does that mean? 19,000.
Digits available to me.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to say, is it doesn't mean anything.
Sure.
So you have to take... Now, let's say we want to make time out of this. So... If it was... If this was storing seconds since 1970, then you know what that meant.
Yeah. That'd be way out of seconds.
It would be a lot. It would be like just, that would be like a couple hours or whatever. That'd be like a day after. It would
be a problem.
Right. If it was hours since 1970, January 1st, 1970, you would know what that meant. If it was, if the units were, like, that's what we're talking about, the units. If the units are hours since 1970, yeah. What's the resolution?
I understand. So you're saying that they just got too cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
Decided to dedicate that much stuff to it.
Right.
Cool. Well, that's a very important thing to know, otherwise. If there's that low of resolution.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with NTFS alternate data streams?
Is that like volume shadow copy or something?
No, actually, volume shadow copies are not stored in the alternate data streams.
Okay.
Alternate data streams were introduced with Windows NT 3.1. They were added to the file system to support HFS features. You know, from the Mac. You're a big fan.
Fuck you.
What's wrong with that?
What, the Mac?
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, I'm an alright Mac fan. You said you're a big fan, or I'm a big fan.
You're a big fan.
Not really. They're, I don't know, whatever.
You're still in fence.
Yeah, I'm on the fence.
Which contains resource forks to maintain metadata about the file. So.
This is like exactly what.
Resource forks. It's just another place to fucking stick.
They've been used by some nefarious individuals in security community for some time.
Dude, it's pretty clever. Like, check this out. Oh. Look at how cool this is. You can even attach it to a directory, too. Not even an individual file.
Cool.
But, like, so I can do this. Type an executable. Stick it into this thing.
Colon.
What? So, like, this executable is now, like, this isn't, you know, just sticking that into that. And then there's your, like, text file that, like, has normal text in it. Ah. And a couple of viruses are, like, really hardcore, and they will fucking rootkit this thing in this thing, and then attach it to all other shit. So it's like, oh my god, it's like you're never getting that fucking thing out of there.
That's cool.
But you know, you take the drive out, scan it, and it's gone. You know, because a lot of some antivirus programs will check ADSs, but not all of them. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Because
it's pretty clever to like stash all of your data in there. Especially given the fact that you can attach it to a directory rather than just a file.
Yeah, because directories don't hold any data. They hold a collection of data. They hold a collection of files, but because you're attaching, that's very clever.
I think it's very interesting. This is like such a fucked up use of this. And the thing about this is that according to this, you know, book, it says like the history of it was that they included this feature and then like not much else was like really...
Yeah, that's what they say, yeah.
What is that about? Yeah, like, nobody cared or whatever.
I'm on semantic.com, but yeah.
So, this guy, I get the feeling, used the internet like way too much. He was...
Okay.
Anyway. What was I going to say? Don't recall. Whatever. Oh. When you right click on. Let me show you if you're interested.
On PC or. I mean, on. XP or 7?
There's actually 7. So check this out.
What, you want to right click there?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I can just use the fucking keyboard for everything. Okay, let's do redsnow.exe. Are you still using that?
Yeah.
Okay. How about auto exact?
That's fine.
You're not using that. So.
Wait, isn't auto exact pat important?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay. What are you doing? HSA. It already says HSA already. Oh, HFS. Different. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
You can't add data the way you can XP, but...
So what are we doing XP then?
Anyway, look. You can do /R.
Okay.
We'll show you that thing.
Oh, it will.
Alternate data stream.
But did you just make one? Zone.ide. There's one right there.
Yeah, they come with
shortcuts.
Yeah, there's stuff when you download a file using Internet Explorer. Where is it? Did you download this thing using Internet Explorer? Chrome?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it downloads this thing, this zone identifier, which is supposed to... I can't remember, but it has something to do with the security prompt where it prompts you, are you sure you want to... It's possible. If you unchecked it, it may have saved that. So when I double-click it, it won't ask me. Can I try and run it?
Yeah, you can run it.
So it'll probably just run and not ask me, are you sure you want to run this thing?
It's a binary, dude.
You're right, it is. So I don't know how the hell that happened. It could have saved some settings somewhere somehow with iTunes. Anywho, when you right-click on something here... and change this data.
Yeah.
This data is all stored in the ADS. Document summary information.
That makes so much sense to me.
Totally does. So I was wondering where the fuck does that go. Warning! Okay. So, yeah, that was interesting to learn about. So, if you're going to be a shady guy, I guess you could stick all your stuff in ADSs.
Because they don't show up, right?
It's like,
well, you could just really put your kit. Could you not just put your kiddie porn in there?
Yeah, fully.
And it just doesn't, if you were browsing around, you'd never find it.
No, I guess you wouldn't.
I don't know how you'd get it. I don't know what sort of image viewer you would need to.
You'd use all of these guys.
Those commands? Okay. ADS-SPY.
There's quite a few. But encrypted. You're double secure.
Sure.
I guess. Okay. 32-bit Unix epic times.
Okay. Epoch times, yeah.
Epoch times.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just the number of seconds since 1970?
Yep.
Is that all it is?
Uh-huh.
All right. Problem solved. Call it like 10,000 different things. So use. I think it's not actually only those two things.
Yeah.
But it's good enough. This is like epic confusing, by the way, this image loading thing of the executables and the structure of them. It's like, I don't know, I just can't imagine that stuff without seeing it or something.
It's because you don't understand pointers. I mean, maybe you do, but you never took a programming class.
Yeah, barely. The relative virtual address. This is a thing mm-hmm. you know, involving memory,
mm-hmm.
which I get, and I'm glad I understand that. But again, it seems really complicated, and I'm really surprised that Windows doesn't crash a lot more, given how fucking much shit is being managed.
That's what unit tests are for.
It's a lot of data being managed, I'll tell you that much. Yes. Okay.
What's surprising to me is that the CPU doesn't make mistakes. That's surprising to me.
Ever?
Well, if it does, then you're overclocking too hard or it crashes. Your machine, your box usually crashes pretty hard if your CPU starts making mistakes.
That's true. It's over.
It's over.
So, yeah, it's one of those things. It's kind of like with encryption. You have one thing off and it's like everything else
it's gone.
Is going to unravel, isn't it? Dude, CPUs are pretty mission critical.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this all about?
Keep your kits.
Yeah.
Next.
Just more intention for your kits. Okay, I think. This is so ridiculous. You can do a memory dump, then search for an eProcess box and compare the processes that have not exited, you know, from the memory dump, to the active processes to determine if any were hidden by rootkit. Yes, that would work.
That's cool.
Yeah. Because how else are you going to fucking know? I guess, right? Okay, that's all. Thanks, G.
You going to sleep?
Oh, sure.
You don't know? Sure. I'm going to sleep. I'll get you a blanket and you can crash on the couch. Or you can, like...
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Much appreciated.
It's 6 in the morning.
Wow, thank you guys for listening. That might have been a really confusing episode, and I hope that
you don't get too confused by all the math sections and stuff that we were doing. But I did want to share that with you because we had recorded that audio with the purpose of sharing. After editing, it's around 2 hours, but I probably spent around 4 or 5 hours editing because I had to clip and do a lot of crap. And so I apologize, and also I'm never ever doing this again. It's funny because originally I had told Sam that he was supposed to edit this audio, and he said, "Oh yeah, sure brosif, sure broski, sure bro, sure bra, I'll totally edit that for you, bro." Never happened. So, fuck you, Sam. Actually, you know, Sam, you're awesome, but probably never doing this again. Probably going to stick with the normal podcast format. If you listen to this all the way through and you didn't like it, I know, I understand. It sucks. If you hated it, listen to episodes between episode number 3 and episode number 20, because those are all normal format. And hopefully we'll be able to podcast for you guys next week. So until then, see you next time.